All right, it's time to find out what's happening at the NAB, the FCC, and any other big player in our industry. And to do that, we have Kelly Williams this afternoon. Kelly is a Senior Director of Engineering and Technology Policy in the NAB's Technology Department. He joined the NAB in 1989, and since has managed a diverse portfolio of technical and regulatory issues, including, not limited to, RF exposure, Stella, the V-chip, closed captioning, 2 gigahertz BAS relocation, video description, and EAS. He represents broadcasters' interests on various industry technology and government advisory committees. He currently serves on the FCC's Communications Security, Reliability, and Interoperability Council, and the Video Programming Accessibility Advisory Committee. Kelly has a BS in Electrical Engineering from Howard University. Please welcome Kelly Williams.
Well, my computer just went clunk. That's not good. All right, we lost my display again. Fine Microsoft products. All right, hold on. There we go. And why? Because, well, it felt like it. All right. All right, if this happens again, we'll just, you know, go with hand puppets. Well, thank you. It's always great to be here. This is one of the great events. The SBE chapter here is just active and great, and of course the WBA is just a fun bunch of folks. I'm always happy to be here. So I'm going to talk about actually sort of a mix of things this morning. It's not morning. It's morning somewhere, but it's afternoon here. I'm going to tell you a little bit about technology department and what we do. We've decided that a lot of people don't even know that NAB has a technology department, so we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk about All Digital AM project that we're working on. That's one of our labs project. I know you saw a presentation on that earlier. So we'll just, I'm sorry. We'll just sort of go through and do some highlights on that. We'll talk about automotive dashboard updates. So I heard some questions yesterday about sort of what's going on, and I think that's an important thing as you look at radio going forward. The FCC put out, we'll jump into the regulatory stuff with a notice of proposed rulemaking that the FCC put out about the next nationwide EAS test. If you didn't have enough fun with the last one, there's going to be another one. There was a potpourri of there's a slide I call other stuff. This is other TV things that are going on that everybody ought to be aware of, you TV guide. And then I'm going to spend the bulk of the TV section talking about spectrum auctions and repacking. It'll be kind of high level, but I think what's fun, depending upon your definition of fun, to note is that the FCC has five, I think I only have four listed here, there are actually five FCC items of some type that have been released in the last 2 weeks regarding how the auction, or things about the about repackaging auctions and spectrum. So we'll run through those pretty quickly. So let's tell you about NAB technology. You know, our job really is to do technology development, innovation. We do a lot of standard setting. Everybody knows about I hope everybody knows about the Broadcast Engineering Conference in April, and that's a plug to come. I get $10 every time I plug an NAB thing, so if you come. And, you know, Broadcast Engineering Conference, we also do a whole lot of other technology-related conferences and also management. You know, if you're interested in sales, you can come for that too, but we think you should come for the engineering. Our real job in the technology department really is to answer questions for the board, and we support the legal department and the GR department. So what that means, we work on regulation. That's what I do, a lot of technical regulation work. And believe it or not, there is other stuff other than auctions going on at the FCC and TV. And also, I do a fair amount of legislation. So these are congressional bills and things. All of us in the department do that. And we do some technical writing, and we have a newsletter. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. In July, this past July, we got a new CTO at NAB. His name is Sam Matheny. He came from Capital Broadcasting in North Carolina. Real forward-thinking guy. We're happy to have him. He is going to be helping us plot the future, and his goal specifically, his job specifically, is to really look at new technology and innovation. And we're excited to have him on board. Apparently, though, we've been keeping him travel. He's pretty much been gone every week since he's been here. But you know, hopefully he'll settle down and get a good schedule. And so watch out. He has a if you have a Twitter, I'm not a Twitterer, tweeter, whatever the word is. That's not me. But he's NABCTO, hashtag NABCTO, if you want to follow that. NAB has radio and TV technology committees that advise us when we have questions, we have issues that come up. Interestingly, the AM All Digital IBOC project really came out of the radio technology committee. If you are an NAB member, or if your employer is an NAB member, you are welcome to join that committee. If anybody's interested, send me an email or just talk to me, and we can see how to get you involved with that. We are always looking. This is how you know Chuck, who has been very involved with us for a number of years. He's on actually a couple of our committees. So you know we welcome that participation. We have a newsletter just for engineers. It's written by our technology staff. It's called this is a TV Tech Check. This is actually the TV Tech Check from Monday. It comes out every other Monday. There's one for radio, one for TV. There's a web page down there. It is for our members only right now, but if any of you really want it, send me a note or talk to me and we can figure out a way to sort of get you on there. And it covers various issues, new technology stuff, what's hot, and other things. Like I said, every other Monday. So that's that. All right, so let's talk about All AM Digital. And like I said, the project sort of came out of interest from the technology side to look at how we would implement an all-digital AM as opposed to a hybrid digital AM in the United States. So the first thing that's up, and I don't know if anybody, if you're living under a rock, if you're in the radio business, you have to have been living under a rock not to have heard this, that BMW dropped AM radio from their electric vehicles. We found that a little disturbing. So we wrote them a letter. And so they wrote us a really polite letter. You can read that. I'm not going to read it. But it was a really polite thank you, but we know what we're doing. So then we wrote them another letter and said, well, you know, your competitors have figured out how to make AM radio work in their electric cars. And they wrote us another letter back telling us, yeah, they know. But thank you, they know what they're doing. So this, you know, it's really kind of, I don't know, is it alarming? It's disturbing. It's curious. If you think electric videos going forward are the future, you know, the fact that someone would just leave it out. But, you know, we've talked with them. I don't know that they'll make a change. But it certainly is worth noting. And it's also worth noting, I think, for respect for radio, we'll circle back around as I get to after the AM project thing, sort of being aware of what's happening in the radio and what the radio experience, particularly in the automobile, is and will be, and how that fits in terms of in competition for radio and sort of what engineers can do about that. All right, so let's talk about the AM all digital project. So the idea is, like I mentioned, is to go to an all digital AM rather than a hybrid. And it provides a couple of good things. One, it sounds better. It's more noise immune, interestingly. Much better audio quality. And the good news is all existing HD radios can receive all digital AM. It's built in. Kind of bad news is there are not a lot of HD radios. But, you know, that's certainly a concern. So the challenges ahead, of course, it's not authorized by the FCC, but what we want to do from a technology standpoint is lay the groundwork to get FCC approval for this. I should say that, you know, there is not really industry consensus that the AM industry should go to an all-digital all-digital scenario, because you abandon every analog AM radio that's out there. So that's something we have to think about as an industry. However, there are a lot of things you need to know, the FCC needs to know, about how it will work, how the allocation will work, and so forth. And that's what this project is doing, is to build the data that we need to do to characterize AM radio. So I just mentioned big drawback that you know, we abandon all the analog radios that are out there, and that's something we really have to think about going forward. So we have a bunch of partners that work with us on this. There are three parts to the test project. I'm going to talk about that in a second. The big part of it, which we just finished, yippee, are field trials. That is, we converted a number of radio stations around the country to AM digital and went out. We did this at night and did a bunch of field measurements and signal strength measurements on all of these to gather data about what the coverage is and so forth. So what is... You know, so here, you know, what is all digital? So this is a typical AM analog signal. This is sort of what a hybrid signal, and there are issues here, as people know. The hybrid signal, the digital signal, can't interfere with your analog signal. Coverage is somewhat less than you would suspect. But however, there are about 300 stations right now that are running hybrid AM, which is a good thing. So all digital would look something like this. No analog, so substantially more power. Different interference characteristics. But you might also notice that the bandwidth is, at least in this particular implementation, is just a tad narrower in the analog. This is sort of the topology of the band plan that we'd be looking at. So the idea going forward in terms of the FCC from a regulatory perspective is getting rules adopted that would allow this. Right now, you can only do this with an experimental license. So these are the stations. This is missing one or two, I think, actually, that we've done. Just the number of stations that we went out, converted. We tried to do a different variety of stations. All of these stations volunteered to have us move in and convert their transmitters and get them up on the air and do some field tests. So this is the output of one of the field tests, just to give you a flavor of the kind of work that we were doing. The green lines that you see, but the green lines that you see, these are the paths that were driven. So interestingly, my colleague David Layer, who did this project, the best, most important skill in this project was how to dismantle the radio and the speaker system in Ford vehicles. Because the way that these tests are run is we inject a tone, a 25 hertz tone, into the signal, and we have software that looks for the presence of that tone, and when the tone goes away or fades out, well, it's digital, it just goes away, then you say we have loss of service. And there's some software and there's some other math that goes involved in doing that. And so he and a number of people who involve, usually station engineers, will go drive these paths over a period of 2 or 3 days. So this is the kind of output, and we've got, like I said, a number of stations we've done this, and we're going to go back and analyze this data. But just to give you an idea, I've got a couple audio files here to listen to. All right, here we go. Cooperate. There we go. All right.
Which is in better shape, you or your car?
I would say my car.
Probably the car, because as you get older, you start breaking down.
I wish I could say.
So that's the analog version. Same station. All digital AM. Oops. Okay. It's it's a pretty compelling audio difference, and it's gotten the attention, I think, of a lot of owners and managers in terms of what kind of quality you gain from doing it. I also have a file of some Skywave. It's recorded on my iPhone. I always keep forgetting to put it in here, but I'm happy to pay it for somebody. That's a real interesting sound as well. But I think we need to learn more about that. The second leg of this project is lab project, and we are looking basically at characterizing radios, because really a big part of receivability of anything are the characteristics of the radios. Well, you know, we haven't done what's called allocation work for AM since the 20s or 30s, I believe. So it's real important that we go, we understand the performance of radios, what they can do and cannot do. So we have, this is being done at consultants, Cavell Mertz and Associates. This is the test bed, and this, some of this is our equipment, some of it belongs to them, and they are testing radios. So the AM project, we've completed the field studies literally just last week. The last station in Seattle was finished 2 weeks ago. Lab testing is underway. We're going to understand the interference behaviors and how receivers work. And the next step, so we've already done one part. We've had some consultants look at how you would do an allocation. The next step is to develop software and take a deeper dive in how we would create the allocation. And at the end of the day, the goal is to have all the ducks in a row so that when our industry says, yes, we're ready to go, and we go to the FCC, we say, look, here's the data you need. Here's coverage data. Here's interference data. This is how you do an allocation. Just rubble stamp it and let us go. So that's it. So I guess I'll wait to take questions at the end on these, because we're going to move on to the automated dashboard. So, you know, I threw this in because I heard some people talking about this, and I thought I'd throw in basically some shots. This is sort of what's going on in terms of what's in the dashboard of the car, the data, and then there's some shots here from CES of different products that are out or that are now out. But you can see there's a pretty substantial growth in products, the announced products, with HD radio built into automobiles. We think that's a pretty good thing. These are just some shots of automobile dashboard components from CES to give you an idea of the kinds of things that are out there. So those of you that don't own new cars. But, you know, everything is going to apps-based in the automobile. In some cars, and we had some problems where there was not a button for radio on the top level or front row. See, in this particular thing, there's one right there, although that's a really interesting symbol, but that's it. Here's another product out there. Again, you can just see it's a jumble. Not a jumble, I need to be more positive. There's a lot of things going on that dashboard in the car. So I think it's important to have, you know, some presence there. But there is, there we see the arrow pointing to the radio amongst these things. And of course, for those of you who love iHeartRadio, that's out there as well. Another. There's a couple of different products. And that one's actually labeled HD radio, which is pretty good. That's JVC. This is, again, another sort of dash thing. The takeaway from all of this, let me talk about this. So there's an Open Automotive Alliance, which is bringing more connected platforms to automobiles. We've been talking with them, and there are another manufacturer. Some radio groups have also talked to them. Make sure that radio continues to be included in the car dash. So same thing, we have Apple that's I don't know how much CarPlay has gotten out now, but it's certainly something that's on the horizon, and you can see there are a number of manufacturers who want to participate with that. There's an Apple, an idea, an example of a CarPlay screen on there. Audi has its own system that they have connected with AT&T. The idea of connected automobiles is certainly out. Many of you have probably seen the ads for GM. You have a connected car. It has a 4G and satellite connected using their OnStar It uses part of their OnStar technology for data. So if you're not paying enough money to somebody for subscriptions for data services, it's an opportunity. But the idea is you have connected cars. So the interesting thing, and I think one of the takeaways of this, you know, Paul was talking a little about Next Radio. The idea that the listening experience that a one of your customers, one of your listeners gets in radio has changed dramatically. So people are used to, on their handheld devices, now on their cars, getting what's commonly referred to as some sort of audience artist experience. So you see album art, playlists, what do you think? The technology exists in radio to do that. RDS is a really simple, rudimentary way of doing some of that on an RDS radio. HD radio has some ability to do that. Next radio, a different way of doing it. But it's really important, we think, that you know, you're not just competing for your programming, but also what is the experience as a listener gets when they tune to a radio station. And I think it's really important as technologists that everybody out there say, what are we offering our customers? How can we do this? How can we compete in a dashboard that has 50 buttons on it? When I hit Sirius XM, I see an experience. When I hit Pandora on that dashboard, I see some sort of experience. When somebody hits my radio station, what do they see other than my call sign? And how are you competing? So that's sort of the big picture overview. We think, one of the reasons we like to talk about what's out there in the dash and why it's kind of important for engineers to understand is we just want to make sure that we compete going forward. All right, let's get to the dry stuff. No, just kidding. Let's get to some of the regulatory. So did anybody miss the last national test? If there's anybody that didn't know about it, you should probably leave because you got to know about it to go forward. So the FCC decided, there might be another test, and there are a few issues, and they put out a notice of proposed rulemaking. For those of you who don't know, part of the FCC, this is an inside Washington term. Notice of proposed rulemaking is exactly what it implies. They want to propose some rules, and they want to know what the world thinks about it. So this NPR that came out back in June, NPRM, there are a couple of things based on issues that they saw with the last test. So they propose a few things. One is to do a nationwide FIPS code. Everybody know what FIPS codes are? We're okay? Okay. They want to come up with a nationwide test code. They propose a nationwide test code, and there are a couple of things about that. They want to require everybody to go online and issue data, enter data, and do reports. You had to do that. Any of you all responsible for going online and putting in the data after the last test? They want to make that a permanent thing. And the other thing they want to do is they want to increase accessibility of alerts. That mostly has to do with television, and we'll talk about that a little bit. So the thing that you need to be a little concerned about is they proposed, once they adopt rules, which could be the end of the year, that all of this would have to be implemented within 6 months. And we'll take a little bit deeper dive into that in a minute. Okay, so essentially what the FCC proposed is to create a FIPS code that does not really exist, which is all zeros. And it would mean the whole country, essentially. This is fairly non-controversial. I don't think there's anybody one way who sort of cares. I mean, it doesn't break anything to do it. But it would solve problems. There was a problem in the test last time, an interpretation, some manufacturer's interpretation of what happens when an EAN. So some equipment said, I saw an event code that had no locations with it. Actually, that's not what FEMA did. FEMA sent the Washington, D.C. location because, well, you can't send no location code in a CAP message. So some boxes actually ignored it because they read the FIPS code and said, this isn't for me. In fact, in the rules, in the FCC's interpretation of the rules, EANs don't have location codes associated with them. So anytime you see an EAN, you're supposed to just process the message. Well, their solution to this is say, well, let's create, we can see going down the road there might be a need for some code that represents the old United States. So that's one of the things they propose. The second thing is to propose a national test code. It is kind of problematic to always do a live code EAN. There are a couple of issues that go along with that. The biggest one has to do with, well, let me, I'm getting ahead of myself. So they propose a test code. It would be an NPT would be the code. It turns out that that is a valid CAP code, although it's not necessarily valid and not usable in the current rules. But it is a CAP. There is a CAP code like this. So they ask two questions. One is the test code could be exactly like an EAN. So when a box sees it, it assumes it's like an EAN and it processes it like an EAN. What that means really essentially is that it allows a audio message longer than 2 minutes in duration. It has no duration in an EAN. Now this is a problem for FEMA because actually FEMA doesn't know how to create, they know how, but they can't, I'm choosing my words carefully here. They cannot create an audio message of infinite length through IPAWS. Let's leave it at that. So, the other, I thought there should be another bullet there. So the other issue is it could be just like a standard test, a weekly test or monthly test. It's processed more like that, where the duration of the audio would be 2 minutes and 2 minutes long, and but the test would originate at FEMA and be done nationally. So those are sort of their two choices. The other thing, the next one up, is this ETRS, a reporting system. So the idea is that you would put data in there ahead of time, and we recommended to them, as in the initial proposal, they said, well, you should put in things like your facility IDs and the lat long of your coordinates of your tram. And we said to them, why? Go pull that out of the Media Bureau's database. You don't need people put in there. You might have to put in what brand of, what make model of EAS encoder decoder you have. And then you would go in later and add data about if there was a test, what happened during the test. This would be mandated by rule, which means if you didn't do it, you'd be subject to a fine. And you'd have to go in annually and change, keep it updated. So you would have to add who do you monitor. Things like that. They haven't really said a lot of details about what would go into this, but I think fundamentally we were okay with that. This last thing in the proposal we didn't quite understand. It said, well, we would somehow integrate what we have in this ETRS with what's in state plans, but I don't know how they would do that. They weren't entirely clear on that. I'm not sure that they necessarily know how they would do that. The fourth issue was about accessibility on TV crawls. For you TV guys in the room, some people have complained that they couldn't read the crawls. Some people say they're too slow. Some people say they're too fast. So they looked at what... there was a caption quality proceeding. Many of you may be aware of that. If not, you need to be aware of that. That was recently passed a few months ago, and they looked at that. However, it has to do things like crawl speed, completeness. So if you have a text crawl, does it really accurately represent what the message was? Placement, where are you placing the crawl? Those are the kind of things. And just overall, how would you improve the accessibility of the alert? We were, again, just a little confused because a crawl across the top of a screen is not captions. Captions roll up inside of a window. One of the things they put out, they said, well, crawls go off the screen. We were like, yes, it's a crawl. It comes on and it goes off. That's a different thing saying my captions are, you know, the window is bigger than the screen and it's, you know, you're moving text. So we're a little confused about this, and we've had some chats with them about this. So we expect that we will see a report and order by the end of the year, and we think the all zero FIPS code, we feel non-controversial. They will probably adopt an MPT, and it will probably be like a standard code. In other words, because they really don't know how to deal with these unlimited audio length, and I think we don't really have an issue with that. Perhaps we'll see something on the reporting form, but I think they need to be more specific about exactly what would be put in and how they would get information from CDBS. CDBS is the name of the media, Mass Media Bureau's database. And the quality thing, a further notice means they didn't get enough information in the first notice of proposed rulemaking, so they're going to do another one. I think they need to focus a little bit on that. The big issue here, and I think you all need to think about this, the six-month compliance date. So the FCC feels that they believe, with no particular reason, they have no data to support this, that FEMA will want to do another test this time next year. So their feeling is that if they want to implement the all zero FIPS codes and the NPT, it needs to be done quickly. So their thinking timeline is rules out the end of the year, and June, July timeframe, everybody has to have this implemented and tested. We feel like that might be a little aggressive, particularly depending upon, you know, it's one thing to say I'm going to get firmware updates for my index. That's another thing. But for those of you that are doing hubbed or central casting, or all those that have more complex EAS implementations and how that's monitored and done, you need time to get this in, play with it, make sure you know what's going to happen, all of that. I don't think that we haven't suggested that it needs to be 2 years or something. We're just not sure that 6 months is enough time. So we'll see. We'll see how they feel about that. So you all need to think about that. And I think if you feel, given your own station operation situation, that even if you had a firmware update in your hand on January 30th, let's say, that you could get it all up and running and tested by, let's say, June, end of June, that you let the FCC know or let us know loudly that this is a problem. Okay, so let's move on to just some other stuff. And this is pretty much, this is sort of, most of the things here are now TV related. So for those of you in television, you may be aware, I hope you're aware, that there have just been a rash of accessibility rules that have been placed on TV in the last 2 years. The last one, which is a result of something called the CVAA, which was a bill passed back in 2010, which generally, this is the one that added video description back. So those of you that are doing, if anyone's doing video description, or you're running a second audio service. So the rules for video description, if you have a second audio service in place that is the ability to do this, this is called the technical capability rule. You have to pass video descriptions if it's in the program that's delivered to you. And that's a very interesting misunderstanding. Most people think, well, it's only top 25 markets. I'm not in the top 25 markets. I don't have to do it. And that's absolutely correct. But if you're a network affiliate and you have the ability to receive it, you are actually required to pass it through if you have already provisioned a second audio service. Now, we commonly call that SAP, but in DTV, SAP doesn't really exist. So I use you from a second audio service. Interestingly, under the category, I say it's interesting, but I do this for a living. It may not be interesting. It just makes more work for you guys. The FCC adopted rules that says this. You must make your weather crawls, that is, any crawl that is preceded by the three beeps. Does everybody, all the TV guys know what I'm talking about here? So when you do a station, starting June 15th or July 15th, I'm gonna get back to you on that specific date, of next year, every time you run a crawl, you must run an audio representation of that crawl on your second audio service. Now, this is not a if you can. This is a you must. This thing is, although we've been, and NAB's been screaming about this for a while, this is an under the radar thing. I will also tell you that there are not a lot of vendors out there with solutions on how you would do it. So here's some of the challenges here. Think about those of you that work across multiple stations. How many different ways do you create that crawl over a different station? So one option is you just pull the data straight out of your EAS decoder, slap it right on the air. Well, how often does that really happen? Maybe it does. Cable systems do that a lot. But a lot of stations, particularly if you have a news or weather operation, that crawl is created in a graphics area or in the weather center. And how do you extract the text to convert that to speech? Is it sufficient to say, well, I'll pull the data off of my EAS decoder and you can get the data straight off, you get the audio off of there. There are lots of ways to get stuff that you could put on there. But is that the same as the crawl? Well, it should be, but it might not be. And the commission is sensitive to the fact that you could have something different in the audio than you would have in the crawl. But necessarily it would be, because people don't read and speak at the same time. So that all this implementation really hasn't been thought of. But you all need to be giving thought to how are you going to do this in all of your stations. If you do not have a provisioned second audio service, you have to do that. So that's not a hard thing to do, but if you have an old ATSC encoder, and you don't have the encoder cards, and you haven't done that yet, just because there's no need to, you don't run Spanish, there's been no demand for it, you now have to go do that. So everybody needs to be thinking about that. And based on budget cycle, if you haven't put this in the budget already, you're gonna be challenged to do it. So that's probably the biggest thing. And I see all you TV guys are going like this. This is not, and we have, it was interesting, I actually ended up doing a lecture. I got back from the South Carolina Broadcasters Association, left the airport, went right to the FCC. I don't know how long I had been awake at that point, probably 20 hours or so. And I did a little lecture for them on a whiteboard on like how things work in a TV station. Because I said, you're saying, well, just throw this audio out there. I'm like, no, you can't just throw the audio out there. It doesn't, I sort of, for a large number of stations in the country, they've never had a need to have a second audio service. If they're not running Spanish, or they didn't buy the encoder with it already provisioned, they don't have it. So it's not. And the other thing is, a lot of times there's not like staffs of hundreds of engineers laying around with free time to do a lot of this stuff as we go forward. All right. Anyway, I think you've got the message. So you need to be thinking about that. If you have questions about that, feel free to contact me. We can talk to you a little bit, take a little deeper dive into it. Caption quality. The FCC adopted a caption quality rules. Now, that's not a particularly technical thing here. It really has to do with, misspellings, completeness, it's who's creating the captions. But there are two important things here. As part of those rules, they adopted something which, for broadcasters, we said, okay. Just check your captioning equipment, your captioning encoders periodically and make sure they work. That is actually in the rules. Don't get excited, but we assume you do that anyway. You should be monitoring. You should have some provision in your plants to monitor the presence of your captions. A lot of people do it over the air. Actually, a lot of people don't do it at all. So figure out if you have a master control or somewhere so that somebody knows when your captions go away. But an interesting thing to be aware of, you need to know on your cable systems too. If you're carried on cable, if the caption goes away on cable, there's an interesting set of rules now in terms of what happens on who's liable for when they go away. But you need to be able to say, I sent captions out on whatever pipe I get to my cable system, and they were there and intact. So when that person makes a complaint, and often that person doesn't know whether they're watching over the air, whether they're watching on cable, which cable system they were, what time it was, what channel it was, they just know it was, not to pick on CBS, NCIS. And the captions went kind of south. So you need to be just sort of aware of, how am I going to monitor captions? How am I going to be looking at captions that I get from my network or from wherever you're getting your programming from, that sort of thing. That's really the big sort of thing. The other half of this is, how many here are doing ENT for their news captions? Do you all know what that is? Script? You're taking, come on, raise your hand. Somebody here is doing, yeah, thank you. All right, so there are things that for ENT that need to be done to make ENT useful. Again, these are not technical things necessarily. But the big news is that if your station starts getting complaints, the commission can take away your privilege. They consider ENT a privilege. They can take that away, and your station will have to pay to do live captioning all the time. So, again, make sure all your capture equipment is working, you have ways to monitor it, you make sure your coder is doing right, the audio feeds going out, if you're doing live captions, make sure those are good quality, those sort of things. So we're, again, just more fun regulation. Let's talk a little bit about a spectrum thing. I gotta get moving here. BAS and DoD channel sharing. If you love the government, they're going to change some of the shares from our BAS channels. NAB is negotiating with them on that, so stay tuned for more on this. There's also a new service called Citizens Broadband Service that's coming along, and it is going to be right next to C-band downlinks. And there's a potential for interference. We're also talking to them about that. Spend too much time on captioning. All right, we're going to blow through some of this auction stuff. So is there anybody that doesn't know about the auctions? Raise your hand. Okay, good. So we'll skip some of the background, because I'm down to like 5 minutes. All of this is sort of background. The Congress authorized the auctions. There are a couple of things I want to get to, which is how this auction is supposed to work. So there is supposed to be simultaneously, people, stations say, I want to give up my channels, and simultaneously broadband companies, wireless companies say, I want to buy some spectrum. And in this process, they are going to sort of see if the stations that remain have a home, find them new channels, then look at a bid, take a bid, and then do this sort of cycle where they go around and say, all right, I have to move a station, I have to move a couple of stations, and that determines the value of the station the spectrum that's being sold, and then how much are they willing to pay, and, you know, what is the value of that station, but nobody bids that, and then so the value of the station will come down. I have to tell you, in the FCC's presentation, there's a black box right here that has no, we just put arrows, but there's a black box there. There, you know, it's really up in the air on how they're actually going to do this. Couple of things you need to know and really be able to understand in terms of what the options are, from the industry steering. First off, you go out, if your owner says we're going off the air, then all of you need to sign up for the SBE job bank, because they're gone, they're out of the business. Station will just go off the air. The other option you choose is to channel share. In the market, you can go in. I think everybody kind of knows about this. These are the options. You can share the same transmitter, and each station retains some rights under the rules. You can elect to move from U to V and take money, or you can elect to move from, if you're a high V, you can elect to move to low V and also receive some payment and value for that. We're showing this repacking process. That commission just calls that a black box. They're not exactly sure how that's going to happen. I'm going to skip some of the reverse auction stuff, because that's like I said, that's good. So the big thing here is, you know, you get paid to move. You have a certain fixed amount of time, 39 months from the time the FCC declares the auction over, to clear off your channel. You have to get everything done and cleared off. Now, the interesting thing is, they didn't say you have to finish your move. You have to shut off the channel, whatever your old channel is, you get a new channel. You just have to get off the old channel. That's a hard, cold reality. There will likely be no extensions, no, oh, my transmitter didn't get delivered. There was delete, you know, the train went off. Statutorily, 39 months, that's it. You have to turn off. Keep that in the back of your mind as you start planning this transition whenever it comes. For the most part, low power, so full power and Class A are covered. Low power is not. There's another item out on low power, folks. We estimate, based on a number of factors, there will likely be 1,000 stations that will have to move. That's roughly twice the number that had to move during the 2009 transition. I believe that number was 400 and something is actually the number that moved. You will not get a choice of channel. What the commission says is they're going to assign you a channel. You have 30 days to file a 301 for your new facility. They claim, now remember, the whole thing has to be done in 39 months. They claim that they're going to process and get you CPs. Okay, they say 30 days. Anybody filed a major change application recently? They say non-controversial. I'm just reporting the news here, okay? I'm maybe editorializing a little bit, but this is what they said. So, 39 months to get off your channel. Planning, planning, planning. Of course, you don't know where you're going yet, because they haven't told you. But anyway, there's $1.75 billion in a fund that will come from the auctions to pay you for that move. Here's the thing, and I know it's in here. I'm going to go off script here because I got 30 seconds. The way the process is supposed to work, you get a channel assignment, you sit there, you're going to get a plan, and you figure, we believe it's going to cost me N number of dollars to make this, to execute the move. They will pay you 80% of N up front, give or take. I think 80% for commercials, non-commercials get 90%. At the end of the process, there's going to be kind of a true-up system where you estimated X number of dollars, we'll give you 80% of it. If you spent more than that, we'll give you the money that you owe, that the government owes you. There is some concern that there won't be any money left, that the $1.7 billion will barely cover the cost to move 1,000 stations. Now, maybe it won't be 1,000 stations. Maybe it'll be 200. Who knows? But if it's really 1,000 stations, so planning, planning, planning. There are some other big things, issues. Those of you who are near the Canadian border, who are impacted by the Canadian border, the FCC hasn't finished any negotiation with the Canadians. So we don't know how that's going to work out. When you go to move, what if you can't move because there's a Canadian allocation or a station there that impacts what you do? Wireless microphones, we're more late about that. Translators, there's no provision for translators in this at all. And again, 39 months off the air. 39 months, say that to yourself in the sleep. 39 months, and you have to get off your system. And of course, the big issue for us is what's the, how are they actually going to figure out what your channel is? One thing about that auction, that circular process, they will come up with a channel for you. There's some question as to whether it's the best channel for you. And that's, even from a spectrum planning point of view, everybody will get a home, but it won't be sort of a well-designed table, what's called a table of allocations, a national table of allocations, like it was in 2009, where they looked and said, how is a station in Vermont impacting the station in Florida? You don't know that in that process they'll be able to do that. In any event, there are just put them out here. There are five things out there, items out there about the auction. This relocation fund, how is it going to do, how is it allocated, how is it going to be paid? Wireless microphones. Okay, as you might guess, not going to be a lot of extra spectrum left. Where are the wireless mics going to go? So there are a number of questions it's asking about wireless mics and how they're going to do that. White space devices, they were allocated channels. How is that going to work? The big issue for us, because we've been talking to the FCC, this actually just came out last Friday, something called inter-service interference. This is wireless, this is the interference between wireless broadband and DTV. So there are a couple of things with DTV. One, we all know about the interference caps on your TV. Well, the FCC for the auction processes did not. They rejected in this report, in order that came out, they rejected the idea of an interference cap. That is to say that you cannot have, so right now you can't have more than 0.5% increase in your overall, your total interference to you. That's not how it's going to happen in the auction. When they go and look at the allocation, they're going to say, here's you and a first adjacent channel. What's the interference there? There's you and another first adjacent or a second adjacent or a co-channel, so many miles. What's the interference? And they're going to limit each of those to a half a percent without looking at the total cap. Plus, you get interference from the wireless carrier. Keep in mind, wireless channels are 5 megahertz wide. TV channels are 6 megahertz wide. In some place, you may be in a market adjacent where you have a little bit of an overlap. What does that interference impact? So they're talking about that. That's what the interference service. The other thing, think of it from the wireless industry's perspective. When I go to buy a channel, I need to know whether that channel, the term the FCC uses is encumbered. So that there's a certain amount of interference on that channel to from a TV broadcaster in an adjacent market. Everybody here familiar with the Channel 51 Verizon issue? Verizon came up in some cities where there was a Channel 51 and they went, oh my God, there's a 1 megawatt TV station operating right next to me, and I have a bunch of 1 kilowatt transmitters. Oops. And we said, well, you bought the stuff at auction. You knew there was a 1 megawatt transmitter. Oh, no. You know, so we don't want that kind of stuff to happen. LPTVs, for those of you who operate LPTVs, and I'm ending here, and we can talk about questions. I'm over my time. So if those of you who have any operating LPTVs, you know there's been this floating date for the final DTV transition for LPTV and translators. Well, the FCC just extended it again. It was September of this year, September 2015. They have now postponed that and said, well, we should wait till post-auction. It turns out that about half of the LPTVs and translators have migrated to digital TV. So they postponed that, and they ask a bunch of questions about what should that date be, how should we deal with it when you translate, when you transition to all digital. They do want to transition to all digital LPTV and translators at some point post-auction. The last thing as part of that, and I'll conclude here, because there will no longer be any more analog transmitters, the commission asks whether or not it should remove the requirement that TVs have to have analog tuners in them. That's the last thing. Of all the things they're dealing with, that's the last thing at the end they'll have to deal with. I'll skip there to the question slide. I don't know if we have time to take... Wait a minute. Yeah, see how much you missed? All right. Oh, I'm sorry. Elephant in the room. I got to get an elephant in the room picture for this slide. Not that slide. One of the big things that comes up is why shouldn't we transition to the next technology and the auction at the same time? The answer is yeah, but they don't line up from a timeline perspective. And as much as we like to, so it may end up with some unfortunate consequences of two transitions at some point, but you know, we'll kind of work with that when it comes out. And I have exceeded. Wow. Yeah. I didn't even know that was in there. I've exceeded my timeline by a few minutes.
We'll go along on the next one, too, so we'll just be off schedule today. I actually have one. The audio over here. The audio with the crawls in the SAP channel.
Yep.
Dot channels. Yes. No.
Yep.
You
know,
sure?
with all of these things, a station can do what's called a hardship showing, and say it's called economically burdensome showing. And so you can always try that, but it might cost as much to pay a lawyer to do that as it is to just go ahead and do it.
Yeah, I know.
In the back, one there. Look behind you, microphone.
Radio World had that GM is dropping HD radio from some of their 2015 models. Comments, thoughts? You think that's really going to happen?
I hadn't actually seen that. That's bad news. They're dropping HD radios. They're not dropping radio altogether. Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, they're in a different business. So, no, I guess that's just kind of bad news. You know, we'd like to keep the growth trend going.
That's Government Motors for you. Anyway, LPTV, I actually have an analog station that hasn't converted yet.
Yep.
Because they're waiting to see what happens with this.
Right.
And it's starting to get very ugly. Was there any determination on the postponement of a date? I mean, I saw a number there of 2022.
No, just that it is postponed, that they said it's best to postpone it until after the repack, and then they can determine sort of what your home will be, and then you transition as part of it.
Right, because
and they ask questions about what that postponement should be.
Yeah, well, my transmitter just crapped the bed, and it's a Larcan. So anybody got a Larcan laying around?
You'd be looking at the used transmitter market.
All right, I think we're going to wrap it up. Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you.